Siren Radio.
Wow, that's awesome news. I mean, I wonder if an angel will get its wings when Paul McCartney sings. Anyway, Paul Basolo was actually reviewing Paul McCartney when he was performing in the States recently. Enough of such stuff, Robin. Is it fair to say you've never actually heard Gabriella Peralta's weather forecast for Lincoln from Gibraltar as yet? I mean, because you've normally been a midweek drive evening soul.
That is correct, yeah.
So this morning edition thing...
It's going to be a rare treat.
Gabriella, no pressure, but lead writer for the world's longest-running science fiction, horror and fantasy magazine is keen to actually see it. And he's wearing a Green Lantern T-shirt as well, so I know you can do it. So go, girl, go.
Okay, I feel the pressure. The weather for Lincoln today is highs of 22 degrees Celsius, lows of 12 degrees Celsius, and it will be a day of light cloud and a moderate breeze.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And Gabriella, you have updated your Facebook cover photograph, so it's clearly a case of here come the ladies.
Stalking me. I went to a wedding, my best friend's wedding. Mm-hmm. One of my best friends, all of them are in that.
Yeah, you've got to say that on radio. We know what you know.
No,
it's
they,
okay.
they all
it's
are, public. Honestly. The first of the friends got married.
It's when the first of the friends start getting divorced, that's the time you realise that you're becoming more chronologically gifted, basically. I've been there, but what the hey? Answer is, just don't get married. End of. Keep that
stability. If you don't, then you'll avoid your first divorce, so really.
Still. Unless, of course, as many people would say, but you're married to your job, Alex. Oh, fair enough. Let's move on. This ship, she gives, she takes, she won't permit in my life. No, I won't start quoting from The Naked Time. It's a different line entirely, and Fergus would think, what's happening in this sort of basis? Yeah. Very nice, I think. How would you define, I mean, we're not really fashion expert. Emma Street, who is our fashion expert, isn't around in the studio at present, but I would say you're wearing a very nice off-the-shoulder scarlet number, really? A red dress?
Very
fetching.
Burgundy.
Burgundy.
Dark red.
Yeah, it's very good. And that's why fashion on radio works so well. I'm amazed we don't do more of it, really. Struck our way through that. It's ventriloquism and tap dancing, the other two areas I'm looking to develop podcasts in. Feel free to work for that, Fergus, if you wish.
What, tap dancing?
Tap dancing on radio and...
well, the only one I know about is Gene Kelly, I could...
And ventriloquism, we've had a sad lack since Archie Andrews effectively passed on a few years ago.
It was Ray Allen.
Lord Charles.
He was at a radio show, didn't he? I never figured out how it worked. It didn't work.
So it goes. The Gibraltar Chronicle, Gabriella, what is currently floating the boat as far as Gibraltar is concerned?
The Chief Minister met with Theresa May yesterday.
Do you know, she's more busy now than she has been at any time in a premiership in so many ways. I'm only kidding, Theresa.
I think she's got to squeeze it all in.
before the end.
I think that's what she's doing.
Everything.
So they spoke about the Iranian oil tanker that's in the Bay of Gibraltar right now, and Brexit, of course. They didn't really give much details. So
the headline
kind of left a bit in the dark.
May pays tribute to Gibraltar for grace-worn detention, highlights importance of independent legal process as well. Of course, that's the Iranian oil tanker Grace One. Okay, and also I'm fascinated by this little one, which I know our Lincoln listener will be astoundedly enthused by, basically. And especially our listener and groomsby, Sarah, who, as you know, Gabriella, big fan. New bicycle racks at Europa Pool and Europort Road. So useful for the Welsh listener, I would have thought, as well as the Lincoln listener. Yeah,
we've got them everywhere now.
It's phenomenal. Robin, have you ever been or considered taking the family to Gibraltar?
I haven't been, no.
It's time to wear your Gibraltarian tourist hat once again, Gabrielle, and apart from the opportunity to possibly meet yourself in this wonderfully small but perfectly formed rock, why should Robin consider taking the Pierce family to Gibraltar in the near future, now that the island games are finished?
Yeah, what's there for us?
I think the thing that most attracts people to Gibraltar is that it's sunny, good weather, speaks English, so you can get around everywhere, So it's foreign, yet not foreign, if that makes sense.
Nice.
Very so
foreign and familiar.
Exactly.
Yeah, you
this
can
is
have
why
your,
we've been going to America.
Stuff.
Foreign,
yeah,
yet
exactly. You can
not
get
foreign.
Around, you can have your plate of fish and chips, and we have all the English pubs down Main Street as well. So we have a really big English influence.
And
but
you,
we're in the middle of the sunshine with monkeys at the top of the rock. So it's, I think when my friends came to visit,
are the monkeys
just
friendly?
Really strange. No, I wouldn't pet them. They explained it once to me, which was really, I'm not a fan of the monkeys.
To other monkeys, possibly.
Yeah.
If you sort of say, I'm related to your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather monkey, then probably say, hey, come in, senor! Or Gibraltarian equivalents. But you go there thinking, you know...
They don't work like that.
Really?
No, if you give them food, they will try and steal it off you. So
pretty much like seagulls in Wales.
Yeah, so
seagulls,
there's always a case of a tourist being bit up the rock because they'll turn up with a bunch of bananas and monkey don't understand when you say, oh, they've run out.
Yeah, no. Monkey not understand concept of they've run out.
That's my phrase of the day. Monkey don't understand.
Exactly. That is everything, really. I'm just working on a sequel to Sharknado 4 with monkeys versus seagulls. Got to happen, hasn't it?
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's
a gap in the market.
I think so.
Monkeys win.
Well, you never know. Robin, last two questions, please, for Gabriella.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have, thank you.
And will you be joining us again in the near future?
I will, hopefully next week.
Yay! An Englishman in New York, the Sting Ben Liebrand mix. Remix, in fact. Now, bone to pick with our next guest, because he leaves the country, Robin. He leaves the country to go off to New York.
And what happens? Well, you know, I mean, it all kicks off. Somebody gets in to see Her Majesty, so checks out Buckingham Palace, an intruder from that point of view. Let's get you started on Kinder Rock and the whole sort of system with respect to that. Richard Fitzwilliams, what on earth were you doing? I mean, please, you know, do you not realise the importance of actually staying in England and maintaining that as opposed to heading off and creating these diplomatic incidents?
Well, I can only say that it is fabulous to have been back in New York, and I was staggered by it. I mean, one of the things I absolutely love, you're on the top of the rock, you look over Central Park, there's the Empire State, there are these fabulous skyscrapers that seem to be reaching up heavenwards, and it really, really is fabulous as it is walking out of Fifth Avenue and all the other spectacular vistas, Sixth and Broadway and so on. Though I have to say, I had a fairly narrow escape. I thought I'd see something on Broadway. I had to. After all, I had to report on the state of New York generally, to Sarin, and what did I choose? Pretty Woman, and what happened? Well, I decided, I can't explain why, to choose a matinee, but just as well, because it was dark in the evening because of the power cut. So, I mean, that was a fortunate decision, and also, luckily, it wasn't near my hotel. But Pretty Woman, something to recommend, Brian Adams and Jim Balance, music and lyrics. You've got Samantha Marks, you remember Eponine in Les Mis?
Well, who could ever forget? I mean, there's
I know, and she and Andy Carl making a, I thought, a pretty stunning couple, remembering the Julia Roberts, Richard Gere movie. This worked a treat, and it's coming to London next year, and so, I do recommend it.
To quote your good self, Richard, because I think that's perfectly okay, whilst you're actually on the programme, from your Facebook routine, absolutely love the production of Pretty Woman, the musical, at the Nederlander Theatre on Broadway. It comes to London next year, and as you rightly said, Samantha Barks, famous as Eponine in Les Mis, absolutely smashing in the Julia Roberts role, had good chemistry with Andy Carl in the Richard Gere role. Did they actually do Kiss in the Bath or not?
There is indeed a scene in the bath. Absolutely.
See, water, electrics and stage. I think it's a disaster waiting to happen, perfect, personally.
Well, I mean, I have to say that there are no disasters in this. I mean, when you have, I know it happens in musicals more often than in other movies and other productions, but when you've got a matinee and a standing ovation and you really feel it. I mean, I thought it was fabulous. I thought it was colourful. I thought that it was very enjoyable. It was good-hearted. I mean, I'm not saying it's great, but I would say it's very, very good fun. That's what it's aiming to be. After all, I mean, you know, there's a billionaire, and then he wanders around the seamy side of town and the hookers around, and what happens?
Richard, I'm still recovering from your inclusion later on of our very own mascot. Got Spike, of course. Look, Spike is there. And the review of the brilliant psychological thriller Don't Look Now and the vacuous but colourful vehicle yesterday. It's all right, Richard. I've obviously changed the spelling and changed the name, actually, of the actress. It's not Lily James. Or is it Lily James? It's Lily James, not Lily Cole. So It's all sorted. Yeah. Anyway, that's a little bit behind the scenes stuff.
Yesterday, that is. Yes. That's in the past.
Exactly. It's gone.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
As indeed was your tour of Buckingham Palace yesterday, which was nice. There, look, Richard, just sandwich that. Richard Fitzwilliams photobombs Victoria and Albert. Wonderful.
Well, I have to say that it was a very, very interesting, because it was Queen Victoria who made Buckingham Palace a home. And what was significant about this new exhibition, this opens on Saturday, the 20th of July, that's coming up, and ends on the 29th of September, is rather an impressive attempt, I have to say, that celebrates 200 years since Queen Victoria's birth, and also what we can see is how she altered the palace and how she made somewhat of a home of the palace, but also you use virtual reality to create what the ballroom would have been like, and also there's a rather extraordinary scene, far too technical for me to explain, but it uses new technology most impressively, and you see them dance a quadrille in the middle of the ballroom.
Fantastic.
That is fun.
Lisa, is the last person you'd expect to find in a highwayside sports bar with curves. A highwayside sports bar with curves. I'm already thinking this could well be treading on possible hashtag MeToo territory. Let's not go there. But as general manager at Double Whammies, it gets even worse. She's come to love the place and its customers. Richard, 'tis time now, before I formally introduce you to Robin Pierce, Emma Street, and obviously Fergus Jeffs, for you to actually say why you've gone for Support the Girls, a comedy
yes,
drama.
I have to say that this is a movie. I didn't know exactly what I was going to get. I knew it would be, hopefully, be pretty good with Virginia King, who did so well in If Beale Street Could Talk. A movie that I think could have been more dramatic, but on a second viewing, I think gave a great deal more than sadly it did with the first. This is directed by Andrew Bujalski. It's a comedy, also at times it's pretty edgy, and I really liked it. Lisa is played by Regina Hall. She's general manager of the sports bar and restaurant called Double Whammies. She protects employees from all the lewd horrors, the customers who come with all sorts of weird intents, and she has a dreadful boss, Cubby, played by James Lee Ross, lawlessly racist, and this is a day in Lisa's life. She's got new employees, there's an attempted robbery, the rules are broken, and there's a problem with the cable, because after all they're going to be watching television, and there's an incident of road rage with Cubby, which I have to say is extremely well filmed, that you really do feel it. The comedy is reaching into quite dramatic territory here. This is what I liked about the movie. It's colourful. I mean, American comedy at its most diverting. She's also separated from her depressed husband, so this is a period that's very difficult for her. How does she cope? Well, there is also the staff, Macy, who's dating an older patron, which she shouldn't, played by Hayley Lou Richardson, and Danielle, a single mother struggling with childcare, played by Shayna McHale. And the reason, really, it's so good is the nuanced performance of Regina Hall, the fact that it's visually extremely diverting, it's in very bright colours. The dialogue, I would say, keep saying this, the wonderful seeing Equus on stage last night, we'll revisit it in a future broadcast, where I could hear every single word. Too often it's indistinct, but the scenes, for example, where jobs are lost, where there's chaos in the restaurant, the scene road rage, there's some individual scenes here which are really good, and it's a funny movie, it's entertaining, it's no mean feat to score so high in the likability quota. So, good ending too.
So no mumbling, but let's do that acid test from your words, Richard, to God's ears, obviously. Let's talk with the team. Emma Street, Support the Girls, is it something you're likely to be checking out?
Yeah, I think it sounds really interesting, actually. I quite like I don't watch comedies that often, but this sounds like one that I'd enjoy. So.
Fergus?
I may check it out. Nice. It's where there's the whole throng of films to get through. I don't know.
Such a rich, exactly. It's a possibility. Robin Pierce.
Well, probably. I don't know that I'd go to the cinema to see it, but
can't see Starburst magazine running review of the thing. But you never know. I mean, sometimes they go. You know, Jordan Boyce goes left field and selects something which I think, oh, that's unusual. What's next?
This is the magazine that put George and Mildred on the top 20 couples.
Exactly. Sorry, Richard. By the way, that's the voice of Robin Pierce, the voice of Richard Fitzwilliams. Consider yourselves duly introduced.
Hello there.
Hello, Robin.
Hi.
Film critics from Wednesday evening, meet film critics from Thursday morning. It's just wonderful. Some might say you should tell it to the bees. There's your cue, Richard.
This is an interesting movie. It's highly imaginative, and it is rather flawed. It's part fantasy. It packs a punch. I was rather drawn to it overall. I mean, visually, it's certainly fascinating. It's set in the grimly parochial and homophobic environment of a small Scottish town in 1952. This is a town too small for secrets, and it's contrasted with the richness of the colours of the interiors of the house. The characters of Jean and Lydia share together. This is, a lot of this movie is seen through the eyes of Lydia's son, Charlie, played by Gregor Selkirk, who communes with the bees that Jean keeps in her garden, so that links with the title. And we follow the fortunes of Dr. Jean Markham, played by Anna Paquin. She's returned to her hometown after years of rootlessness to take over her late father's medical practice. And Lydia, played by Holiday Granger, an outsider from Manchester who works at the local mill for her sister-in-law, estranged from her brutish husband who's been changed by the war, and is, together with her son, evicted from the home they rent after she loses her job. So when they move into Dr. Markham's spacious house, a relationship develops between the two women, and Charlie talks to his beloved bees in her garden, and he also discovers there are rumors in the town about Jean's past. I mean, the movie, the appeal of the movie to me, Anna Paquin, an extremely good actress, performance, the right air of mystery, toughness to the character, and a sensitivity, so it's an interesting mix. Holiday Granger, also compelling because there's an appealing vulnerability. She teaches on the edge of absolute disaster. Good supporting cast. Bees, pivotal to the plot. It's almost as though they were an integral part of the natural world. I mean, they respond angrily when the perverse prejudices of the human world threaten to destroy a truly loving relationship, because the town is the last place that you'd imagine that Dr. Markham would have come back to. It's full of bigots. And also, there is a surprising poetic moment. It depends whether or not it works for you. When the two worlds are in harmony and the bees behave, I mentioned this is a pop fantasy movie, in a rather strange way. I have to say there are problems with this movie. Parts of the plot follow a particular agenda to obviously, I mean, you know when there's the husband that is going to be drunk and abusive and so forth. I mean, this is part and parcel of cinema at the moment, where very often you do get stereotypes, and that's one of them. Also, one of Jean's child's patients dies. A mother knows or remembers her from school and remembers certain aspects of her character, and when the child could have been saved, she's too quickly forgotten. And the metaphor of the bees and their behavior, the bees do all sorts of strange things, is somewhat rather labored. We have stilted dialogue. There also must mention scenes of violence.
Stilted dialogue. Does it, Richard, by any chance actually channel the spirit of Owen Allen's Swarm of the 1970s? I mean, surely if you want to have a B-movies, Swarm has to be way up there.
It has to be way up there in the list of movies that I did not see.
Wow.
You can't have seen Swarm, Alex. Couldn't possibly have gone to see Swarm. I mean, that I can't believe. I think that you're having fun. I mean,
Michael Caine was at his best. Killer bees in the United States.
Those notoriously dreadful loads of rubbish here, they say. But I must mention here, in the talking about this movie, there is a really, really shocking scene of a forcibly performed abortion. But what you've got are two women, very different backgrounds. They're in love. They discover their destiny against the odds. And it's obviously a relevant story. So, as I say, it is a very flawed film, but I found a lot to enjoy in it. It's an LGBT movie with a lot of differences.
Okay, that's the reverse order. Fergus, tell it to the bees. Will you be tell it to the Marines?
I may check it out when it goes to like Netflix or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe something like
that's not going to go down with Richard, you know.
Well,
least Netflix are actually at San Diego Comic Con, unlike Paramount and Sony.
Sadly, not going to go down with me. No. But I mean, better to see it on Netflix than not see it. Fighting this battle, though, is fast going to become a losing war.
Just let it go, Richard, as they say in Frozen, probably Frozen 2 as well.
You tell Alex, that's your next task, to go to Cannes next year and give them a lecture on it.
Okay. Emma.
I think I'll check that out.
Okay.
Sounds like I'd enjoy that.
And Robin.
Probably not. I'll probably put in the Disc of the Swarm again.
How nice.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
And whilst we're talking about 70s disaster movies, a quick mention, Richard, it's back.
You just thought it was safe to go into the water. Quick mention, Alex, you're very cruel, but when it comes to
otherwise, it'll come back to bite you. That's the key thing from 1975, the year of the swarm, of course, but something else underwater.
Oh, yes, Roy Snyder, Richard Dreyfuss, Robert Shaw, shot on Martha's Vineyard, that ominous presence suggesting Hitchcock, and my goodness me, Spielberg. I mean, the whole movie was marvellous. It changed the way films were distributed in America. It was the highest grossing film till Star Wars. I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever. It was absolutely terrific in every way, and I mean, it was hell to shoot. Whether it's apocryphal or not that Spielberg avoided the last day of shooting because they thought they'd throw him into the water, I don't know. It's rumoured that he always does that subsequently as a bit of fun. But that great white shark attacking beachgoers, oh, yes, 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 Jaws is back. You've got to mention it, and you've got to sigh. I don't know how many times I've seen it. I mean, John Williams deserves so much credit, of course. That nocturnal swim, and incidentally, just to link it with my American trip, Jonathan Philly, my cousin, was the boyfriend of the girl who goes for that unfortunate swim. She goes into the water, he's drunk and drops on the sand, and that links with my American trip because I visited one of their houses in Park Avenue, which they used to own.
So, let's just have the... Emma, have you ever seen Jaws?
Yes, of course.
Oh, you're right. Okay. And Fergus?
Many times. Enjoyed it many times.
Oh, it's fantastic, isn't it?
And Robin, yet to see it. You don't like the water.
I watch it every single summer. I live in a coastal town, remember?
You ever gone swimming in... You know, have you, after seeing that movie, did it affect you a bit whenever you went in?
In a way that you can't possibly imagine. No. I have to admit, here and on the air, Richard, I'm 59 years old. I've lived in a coastal town all my life. I have never learned to swim.
Mm-hmm. Well, and why should
take
you?
That, I've Steven Spielberg.
I've never learned to drive. I mean, the thing with Jaws, it's so wonderful the way it played on your fears.
Mm,
and that scene in the beach when the town, which doesn't want to close down, obviously, because it relies on tourism, and it's they have that scene with everyone's placidly sunbathing on the beach and summer swimming, and then we've got some sharks and a sailboat. I mean, that's masterly.
Although, it's the power of denial, isn't it?
Possibly not as scary as seagulls and monkeys will be once we actually get Spielberg on that case, but that's another line entirely. Richard, the last two questions are going to be asked to you now by your fellow film critic, Robin Pierce.
Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, I've had lots of fun. I'm hoping next week Alex is going to give me a chance to talk about the Big Apple.
I think so. I mean, we can do Origins and Lemons the week after,
of course. Well, that kind of answers question number two. Will you be joining us again?
Well, yes, I hope also you will be on the programme and we can discuss movies.
Okay.
We'll try and connect via Skype. It works with Los Angeles. Excellent. One day it's going to work with you, Robin, I'm sure.
It'll work with Wales one day.
No, my Skype does work, but I find that nobody seems to want to use it.
Richard, we might go there next week. We might just go there. Take care.
Cheers.
I used to be so careless, as if I couldn't care less. Did I have to make this mess when I was Mary's prayer? Suddenly the heavens rose. Suddenly the rain came down. Suddenly was washed away. Mary that I knew. So when you find somebody you keep, think of me and celebrate. I made such a big mistake when I was Mary's prayer. So if I say, the
C-H-L-O-E and Y spells Chloe. S-A-C-V means Sound and Chloe's Vision each month on Siren Radio, where music, theatre and magic are made.
Yay! And she's in Spain, but that doesn't stop her, does it? Does it, Chloe? You know, you're there, you're sorted through. No, exactly.
It's so good to hear from you again. It really is. Gosh. Well, though I've been in Spain, I was still thinking, oh, I've missed it. I've missed being on Siren, so it's good to be back as well.
Well, Chloe, the energy that you give to the whole Siren experience is just dynamic in you know, all wonderful ways, basically, which is great stuff. And, of course, your connection with the tune we were just playing, Mary's Prayer, is?
Yes. It's basically, I wrote a song with Gary Clack, who he's the lead singer of Danny Wilson, who you just played as well, and that's one of his hit songs as well, which I absolutely love. So it was a pleasure to work with him as well.
Exactly. Now I'm not sure, Robin, whether you've actually heard Chloe's wonderful performances as yet, even when you've been based in Wales. But if not, consider yourself duly introduced to the awesomeness that is former Miss Lincolnshire, but now she's Spain's very own darling performer.
Okay.
For a few more months, Chloe Rose with a Y.
Hi, Chloe.
Hi there, you all right?
Yeah, great, thank you. So are you based in Spain?
Yes, so basically I'm in Mallorca at the moment, and so I'm singing over here, but it's quite good, you know, it's lovely to sort of perform to different audiences all the time, and I'm really enjoying that, and it's a great experience as well to just do something abroad and, you know, not where home is, I guess. But,
nothing wrong with Grimsby at all.
You know? There isn't.
But what I'm getting from this is it doesn't matter where in the world you go, Alex will find you and put you on the radio. There's no getting away.
That is so true. You are so right. You'll find a way to get me back on.
Yeah, you know, it's appreciated. I mean, it was only a year ago, I think, we were doing the Lincolnshire show together, and then magic sort of happens. Tessa, of course, sends her best. She's got another sound and country vision. She's been busily interviewing the Pierces, amongst other things. Sorry? Actually, she has done the Pierces. I was thinking another duet who set country music going in this particular country.
Ward Thomas.
Thank you. Exactly. See, that's Fergus is on the case. He doesn't mess around with that. He's straight in there. Ward Thomas, who kind of channels some of the Pierces, but, you know, we're not going to play the Pierces because that would be cliched. Emma, what would you like to ask Chloe Rose, Liverpool supporter?
Liverpool supporter?
Oh, yes.
Bring it up.
Oh dear.
Tell us about your recent single then. What's the message and the meaning behind it?
Yeah, so basically the song that I wrote with Gary, it was kind of sort of breaking free of, it was sort of about heartbreak and kind of breaking free from that as well, like a toxic relationship. It sounds a bit dramatic, doesn't it? Dear me. And yeah, that's what the song was about, really.
We will hear lungs in a few moments, Emma, and you can fit that. That. Yes, 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 very good.
But yeah, it was great to write that with him. So.
But meanwhile, Chloe, we've got a little task for you to do, because it's fair to say it's been new season of jingles. It's a bit like sort of the spring sweeps, the autumn scenarios, the pilot season, so on and so forth. And a couple of our new media folk here, the Midwick Drive, etc., have had their own sort of customised jingles, starting off actually with Fergus. So, I mean, obviously we've heard it. So have a listen to this one.
English graduate, movie critic and Leicester City fan, Fergus Jeffs fearlessly outfoxing the Siren Radio Fellowship on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
So you see, you got the Leicester City there. You got the
sounds great.
No insult, just says it.
I'm not sure about this, because I mean, I still think actually it shows how despite the challenge, you know, you wouldn't. And Chloe, as an unbiased Jurgen Klopp supporting Liverpool side, she's even worn the England shirt in this very studio. So I mean, she's very passionate follower of the whole thing, which is why it was good, Chloe, that Manchester City actually managed to win all three trophies on the domestic front last season, wasn't it?
I know, it was very good indeed.
Thank you.
She said
that, but you did win in Europe. So anyway, have a listen to this one.
Ace public relations and communications scholar and overcoming the handicap of being a Spurs supporter, Emma Street is back on the Midweek Drive and Siren Radio.
You see, breaking that down, ace PR communications person, you know, really sorted up for that.
Yeah, I like that bit. It's the Spurs supporter. It's not even Tottenham Hotspur, it's Spurs with a... spitting it out.
I mean, your thoughts, Chloe. I mean, is it a case of we need to redraft? We need to get, when you're back in Britain, we need to get you to revoice? I mean, what would you say?
Well, maybe. You know, I can always give it a go. But I think that was a good job. I think that sounded great to me. But, I mean, that's my opinion. I like a lot of things.
Yeah, as a Liverpool fan. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. And I think you were shocked when you knew I supported Liverpool. I thought you were really shocked. You thought, oh, gosh. A bit of a dark horse into football.
It was almost as shocking as a piece we'll be listening to in a few moments with Will Mellor when I finally realise that he's a Man U supporter. It's okay. He's coming up in a few seconds. To take us around to that, we have got... Actually, Chloe, share social media. How can Robin and his entire family start liking Chloe Rose and all the rest of Bits and Pieces? No pressure, Robin.
Well, I already like her. Sounds lovely.
Thank you. Oh, thank you very much. Well, you sound lovely as well.
Thank you.
I love everybody's energy in the studio. It sounds great over there. It does sound very good.
Yeah, Britain can still give you energy, even in Mallorca. Although I have to say, Chloe, you've probably actually beaten the early quotes that Gabriella Peralta provided Robin with your classic Mallorca. It's quite good. One for the Mallorca Tourist Board in every sense of the word from that point of view. Anyway, yes, Chloe, share with us for people who are Chloe Rose fans, and I'm sure Emma will like you as well, even though, as I say, Tottenham and Liverpool have got a bit of history, I suppose, really.
Just a little bit, yeah. Still a bit sore, but
and Leicester and Liverpool, well, you know, there it goes.
Yeah, that Vardy goal. Mm-hmm. Still amazing.
Basically, to find me, it's if you just type in Chloey, it's a bit quirky, Chloe, then Rose. You'll find me on Facebook, I'm on Instagram. Give me a message, give me a text, say hello. I'm also on iTunes as well, if you want to listen to my music, and Spotify. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
Chloe, who would you like to actually ask you those last two questions? Would it be Robin? Would it be Emma? Would it be Fergus?
The thing is, I feel I can't be biased and choose one of them, any one of them, because I would feel dreadful. I think you should choose.
Well, I suppose technically Robin's back in Wales in a few hours' time, so he'll be out of the country.
Oh, there you go. So. Yeah, that's it, you see. That makes sense.
Out of the country. And illegal immigrant no more.
Exactly. So I think, Robin, falls to yourself.
Chloe, have you had a reasonably entertaining telephonic link with us this morning?
Absolutely. It has been a pleasure to speak to you all. It really has. I've enjoyed it very much.
And will you be joining us again in the near future?
Yes. Yes, just let me know and I'll be back on the show.
Chloe from Spain. We might actually feature you next week, actually, to work through that, because Lungs is set and ready to actually go. Would you like to introduce this, please, Chloe Rose?
Yes, this is Lungs.
Keep breathing all the time. You know, and don't pant, because it's too much excitement, really. Just keep breathing. Coming, it is actually happening. National Pub, not week, but National Pub Fortnight. And all sorts of exciting things are coming with respect to this from Friday, amazingly enough. And who better to officially launch the joys of National Pub? We can tell us a bit about it and how in some of the British pub takes on a whole new meaning than the ace actor extraordinaire, whether it's Broadchurch, whether it's Two Pints of Lager, whether it's any of the wonderful things he's actually doing. It's wonderful. Will Miller, how are you, Will?
Hey, very well, thank you.
Excellent. So, Will, share with us. I mean, this is almost a dream in many ways for folk to actually, you know, cricket comes home, we win the World Cup, and now we've got National Pub Fortnight to look forward to.
Fantastic. I think it's a great thing, National Pub Fortnight. It's just to encourage people to get down to the pub, you know, get social, get out the house and be social. And it's not being going down there and, you know, drinking more than you should. It's more about getting and being social. There's so many pubs up and down the country, which if you go on to the www.nationalpubfortnight.com, you can find out what's going on in your local pub. There's 2,500 pubs involved, and there's 100,000 free drinks out there as well.
Well,
just get out there and have a look. You can't have them all at once, obviously.
The next thing.
It's to find out what's going on in your local pub. We're trying to encourage people now in pubs to do different activities to encourage different people down to the pub. So it's about being social.
What's your ideal pub, Will? I mean, is it a case of do you like the sawdust on the floor? Do you like the kind of more, shall we say, trendy version? Do you like the sort of bar? I mean, is there a sort of mellow theme pub that you actually say, yeah, this would be my choice?
No, I go to, I have a village near where I live that I go to, and there's probably five or six pubs there. But there's a couple. We sort of work our way down the street, you know, depending on the kind of night it is. There's a quiz in one of the pubs. And the other pub's opposite a bookie, so if you want to have a quick bet on the horses or anything like that, and then the pub further down has got loads of screens in, so we go there for the football. So it's got a bit of everything. And I like being out for the football because of the atmosphere, you know, especially if my team, I'm a United fan, if there was my United playing against, say, Chelsea at Tottenham. Yeah.
Well, you've got Leeds United in Australia that you're doing at present, so I mean, something like that, which I'm sure will be fun.
Yeah. I go down there to watch the football with them so I can have a bit of banter and we have a bit, you know, it's a bit of fun.
I'm speaking, Will, as you appreciate, as a Man City fan, so let's just keep it going on a professional level. So it's all good. It's the way forward. You know, don't hang up yet.
Yeah, nice talking to you. Bye.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just move on to briefly. Keep the positivity going. I mean, Ole, I'm sure, will do wonders for you in the fullness of time. But let's talk about this free drink, because this is something that people can actually sign up for. You can go to freedrinkoffer.co.uk, which is, again, another absolute bonus.
Oh, it's a great bonus. It's just, you know, the thing about, you know, getting these free drinks, it's a way of getting on the website, have a look where you can claim your free drink. Also, like I said, on the website, there's so much more information about where your local pubs are, what's happening in the local pubs, just to encourage people who may not have gone out to the local pub thinking, oh, I bet it's this or I bet it's that. Find out what's right for you. As I said, it's not just about the drinking culture. It's about maybe your dad hasn't been out for a while, or your uncle or your mum, or, you know, some people are going through a lot of stuff at home on their own. You know, the pub is a great social place to sit and have a chat. It's a hub, really. And it can be anything. And you can, as I say, there's lots of great gastro pubs out there. So you go and have a bit of dinner and have a chat. I was out the other week and I sat for a few hours in a pub and I saw a friend who I'd not seen for a while, and I found out so much about him, what he's going through and stuff. And that's because of the pub. Otherwise, he'd have just been sat at home and he wouldn't have had anyone to talk to. So it's a good social place.
I said to Jose Mourinho, he should have spoken to you about this a lot sooner, basically. But, yeah, that's by the by. You know, we just move on from that. Will, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self. Who knows, maybe sometime you will actually restore your sort of rightful place in Manchester. I say rightful place, obviously. We won't go there. But National Pub Fortnight is happening. It's going to be fantastic. And you can go to nationalpubfortnight.com. Will Mellor, many thanks indeed. Take care. We salute you, sir.
Thanks very much. Bad luck next season.
Yeah, you see, there's no need. There's no need for that, really. I mean, you reveal your sort of supporting allegiance. I mean, it could be more challenging. We could have both actually laughed at Newcastle United. No, we couldn't, Ian, because obviously we welcome you to the production. Wouldn't you be doing anything for National Pub Fortnight at all?
Not really. I'm a bit too old to go on that sort of thing. I mean, I do go to the pub most nights, just for one pint, and then go home and have a chat with people. And I listened to carefully what he was saying, and yes, I can see what he's gone on about. I thought he reacted really well to your patronising thing about all these sorts of getting things in the right in the passage of time.
Did you think it was patronising, Ian?
Sure. Oh, he did.
Listen, I've already taken flack from Emma Street, who maintains that I've actually sort of produced a jingle and ident for her, which is just... I mean, I think it sort of shows the sort of positivity of I mean, Chloe seemed to be quite taken with it. We'll play it for you if you want, Ian. But before we move on to that, your Facebook little quote, which I thought was wonderful, has put up actually at 8 minutes past 10 a.m. in the morning, obviously a.m., on July the 12th. I find I put things off as I get older. My most recent and dangerous example being... I'll tie my shoelaces later. it's that kind of profound stuff, Ian, that, you know, you can't buy it on other stations, honestly. There's some introductions. Fergus, obviously, you know, Leicester City supporting Fergus Jeffs. Yep. Yeah. Emma Street, you know, despite the handicap.
You just can't help yourself.
It is
Tottenham Hotspur supporter.
Do you think so? Okay, well, I'll set this up. We'll see what Ian makes. I've never actually introduced Newcastle United to Ian because I didn't think I wanted to make mockery of the Steve Bruce scenario, really, because that would be there. Anyway. And Robin's already glazing over now as a non-sporting soul and film critic from Wales who's doing all sorts of other bits and pieces. What were you doing on Sunday, Ian? Were you glued to the set? And did you think, yes, it was all planned for Ben Stokes to actually have the ball bounce off his bat in such a way that another boundary and another four was actually developed?
expected. I watched almost all of the game, actually.
Mm. So not but, for you.
Somebody told me after the game that, in fact, when the fielder threw the ball, the two batsmen, Stokes and the other guy, hadn't crossed for the second run. Therefore, that second run didn't count, or shouldn't have counted.
Yeah.
And therefore, New Zealand, in fact, should have won.
Yeah. Yes, but at the same time, 1960...
But I was just dizzy with the whole... It was so esoteric. We went down rules I've never even contemplated. I mean, the number of boundaries you score in a match to decide when you win a World Cup final.
Yeah, it was a shame.
I think I'd rather have a replay.
Oh, come now. Now, is it fair to say that you decided to give your full attention to the cricketing World Cup, or were you tempted, like Emma and like Fergus, to actually alternate with the Wimbledon final as well?
Not really. I'm one of those people that once I do start watching tennis, I can get engrossed in it.
Mm.
But I don't. I'm not a great tennis fan, and. I love watching cricket, especially the 50-over things, and I love watching golf.
Oh, God.
I find that golf can entrance me for a whole day.
You're not a golf fan then, Emma?
No, I don't think I've ever heard anybody describe golf as something that's interesting and fun to watch. I'd much rather watch tennis.
Well, look at the readings. I mean, there are a few people mildly interested, aren't there?
Yeah.
It's nice to have a bit of controversy at 8 minutes to 9 o'clock on a morning here.
I'm still insulted by my little jingle. That's what the issue is.
All right,
let's
turn to the arbiter of good taste and balance. You know, former Guardian journalist, Tyne Tees television producer, and writer now, Ian Lennox. Are you ready, Ian, to actually cast your ear over that? Because Robin's heard them. I mean, we haven't even played yours as yet today, Robin, so, you know, we'll get that sort of thing. In fact, technically, we should actually give a Robin Pearce sort of mention for that. So this was Robin's little ident.
Lead writer for the world's longest-running magazine of sci-fi, horror and fantasy. Host of Piercing the Veil, regular Stone Tapes and Midweek Drive contributor, and the UK's very own Welsh Caped Crusader. It is time for Robin Pearce.
Yeah, so no question there about Caped Crusader being sort of an affliction in any way, shape or form. It's there, sort of. Ian, happy with that?
Oh, yes, try and live up to that.
Then, of course, we had Fergus Jeffs, and you've got to know Fergus over the last few weeks, and Fergus, of course, came storming in with...
English graduate, movie critic and Leicester City fan, Fergus Jeffs, fearlessly outfoxing the Siren Radio Fellowship... on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
The crowd gasp.
Yeah. the crowd gasp. And then we come to the one which has kind of been a little bit of a bump in the road, really, and I'm still at a loss to understand why.
Ace public relations and communications scholar and overcoming the handicap of being a Spurs supporter, Emma Street is back on the Midweek Drive and Siren Radio.
You can see why I'm a little upset.
I would demand more money if I was you.
Yes.
Well, what the hey. We'll obviously go to town at the York Maze in a couple of weeks' time. Because, actually, Emma, you won't be around next Wednesday because you'll be seeing your boyfriend graduate, I believe.
I will be,
yeah, yes. Sorry. Mm. Okay, Emma, any questions you want to put to Ian Lennox about life, the universe and such like stuff? I mean, you could talk to him about Steve Bruce and Newcastle United now.
Oh, no.
Ah, that's cruel.
I think Alan Shearer's described, they won't, apparently they're mates, Alan Shearer and Steve Bruce are mates. And Alan Shearer warned them off they're taking the job instead of this toxic situation. And I think they've already got him at 5-2 to be the first manager to be sacked.
I just think it's planning ahead for the championship, which is very good.
Well, he's got a lot of experience there, hasn't he? So,
precisely.
You know, the latest story I've seen about seats and things is that they've now got 12,000 seats unsold.
12,000 seats unsold. You ought to switch your allegiance to Lincoln City and actually sort of follow that thing through. That's the key thing.
I'm going to watch some local teams. I used to be, when I was a young reporter, I used to go around the local leagues and do the matches. So I'm looking forward to sort of revisiting some of the grounds I went to as it goes.
Gateshead, for instance.
Yeah, Gateshead, Blythe.
All the greats. Yeah. So, Ian, would you like to quiz Robin Pearce about what he's been doing over here and which he's about to actually enter his fifth hour
of Siren Wonderment. He's done 2 hours of the Midweek Drive yesterday, the Stone Tapes 50th Anniversary Edition, and an hour of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. He's got one more hour to actually go. Ian, you can use your investigative journalist hat to actually quiz him.
Robin, are you trying to get in the Guinness Book of Records?
Well, if I could get a record for anything, it would be a talkathon, I think.
Obviously, not a married man.
Actually, I am. But you're all talking about
wife in a million. Then
you're all talking about sports, and I do actually have a sporting story. Now,
okay.
I was working in Carnarvon Castle in Wales. I was on the gate this particular day. And there was a Manchester City manager, Jose something or other.
We haven't had a manager called Jose.
There was...
There's Manchester United manager.
Manchester United.
Jose Mourinho. Oh,
don't mix Manchester United and City up. That's
I met this guy, but I had not one clue who he was.
Good response.
He was probably relieved, actually.
He came up to the ticket office, yes. And all I could see was a guy with white hair, and
yeah.
He seemed to have been showering in creosote, because he had that sort of fake tan kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, teeth a little bit too perfect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he asked for a ticket. And yeah. He said, yeah, okay. And I sold him a ticket.
Yeah.
And somebody else came up to me and said, hey, do you know who that was? I said, not one clue.
Mm.
And he said, well, he's so-and-so. And I thought, oh, okay. You didn't charge him to come in, did you? Well, of course I did. Did you give him a discount? Of course not.
Yeah, and Jason Marie.
It's amazing, though, isn't it? I mean, they could buy 10 tickets and they're not...
They could buy Carnarvon Castle.
Or Carnarvon Castle.
Exactly, and Jose Marie.
I would have said, why don't you buy that old lady a ticket at the back while you're on there?
But that was my one brush with sports.
That is awesome.
Not the best one.
Oh, I don't know. I'm thinking that could be his audition piece for 442 magazine. You know, forget Starburst. Sub there. You know, as a journalist, James Brown, he's taking it all sorts of directions.
You could have the England cricket captain, whoever he is, walk in here right now,
Owen
and he
Morgan.
Would get a...
Like even sounds Welsh, even though actually he sounds like he's from Ireland, actually, Owen. But Morgan, it's definitely Welsh. But I suppose that's why you love everybody.
I think he's one of the only ones in the team that has a tattoo on him. A long day from the days of Colin Cowdrey, that's all I have to say.
A long, long day indeed. Who would you like to ask you those last two questions, Ian Lennox? Emma?
I don't mind at all.
You don't mind.
I know the answers, so...
Okay.
I expect they get full marks.
Well, then go for it, Robin.
Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, I have, thank you.
And will he be joining us again?
I do hope so.
Awesome.
That's it. You know, magic stuff in all sorts of wonderful ways, and that's not a reference to the baseball. Or is it baseball? I think it's basketball, Magic Johnson.
Basketball.
Even I know that.
Well, baseball is just American cricket, really. No, it's rounders, really.
It's rounders.
Yeah, right. And they performed at Wembley with the New York Yankees taking on board all sorts of things. After the news, Jane Gerrard, director at Personal Career Management, will be talking about the relationship between jobs, payment, and happiness. And the weather today for Lincoln, highs of 22 degrees centigrade, lows of 12 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a day of light cloud with a moderate breeze. OK, we alluded to this just at the end of the first hour. The happiest low-paid workers have been revealed in a recent survey by Gumtree Jobs. It states that those working in security, construction and computing are some of the happiest low-paid workers in Britain, almost as happy as those working in the fitness industry. Interesting when we start talking about the relationship between happiness, payment and such like. And who better to actually talk about the findings for this particular survey in the gig economy, in which full-time employees earn on average a little over £16,000 per annum, well below the average UK salary, than the awesome director at Personal Career Management, Jane Gerrard. How are you, Jane?
I'm really well, thank you, Alex. How are you today?
Very good indeed. And I must admit, a little bit quizzical about this particular finding, because we've got three fine folk in the studio, and I think the notion of, you know, £16,000 per annum, it's not great, is it, Emma?
No.
No. Are you happy in your part-time work that you do?
Don't mention where. It's a supermarket chain, but we won't mention where. And Fergus, what about that sort of number crunching for yourself? Is the relationship between money and happiness and job? Or is
it depends if it's the job that... It depends what the job is, I suppose. Yeah. I mean, if it's a job that's enjoyable for you to do, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter what the pay is.
It doesn't matter what the pay is. I mean, is that ultimately, Jane, what is at the heart of this particular survey, that people employed in the fitness industry are the happiest low-paid workers in Britain, or are they just forced to actually be happy and low-paid?
I think the research from Gumtree Jobs is really interesting in looking at what motivates people out there in the UK. And what it does reveal is that 85% of people that work in health, sports and leisure are really looking forward to going to work every day. What's that about? There could be lots of reasons for doing some kind of health physical work. You know, that's going to make you feel good, isn't it, in terms of getting the old endorphins flowing. But I guess some of the other things around it are that if you work in this field, then you are helping people, you know, you're supporting with their well-being. If you're a fitness trainer, you might have a training session with a client, and that client feels great when they go home. You feel good too. And, you know, for you, you've got the flexibility of work as well. So it might be 11 o'clock when you finish that session with that trainer in the morning, and you can go home.
Looking at the top nine here, customer service comes at number nine with 61% of those quite happy from that point of view. I suppose there's a generic sort of aspect from that. Retail is joint eighth with housekeeping and cleaning. Hospitality and catering in seventh position. Security in sixth position. Then 72% of people saying they're happy in the low-paid sector. Healthcare, beauty and medical. Driving and automotive also joint fourth with computing and IT. And we've already heard construction and property, teaching and education in number two, and sport, fitness and leisure number one. I mean, Robin, listening to those figures, does that chime? I mean, you've in a sense, you never retired, you're a writer, you continue ever onwards from that point of view. But I mean, when you stepped aside from sort of regular day-to-day employment, was that something, were you happy at Carnarvon?
I was very happy. I worked as a custodian for a couple of years in Carnarvon Castle. Before that, I had an office job, and my happiest days in the office were working on a website and working on IT. So, I can see where that comes from.
So is the message that's coming across here, Jane, one that, I know, is it a dangerous message? People say, oh, it's all right, we can actually sort of pay people a lot less as long as they're happy. Or is it all, is happiness the one thing that we're looking for at the end of the day?
So it's going to be different for every individual out there in the workplace. Certainly what the research found from Gumtree Jobs was that 72% of people, for example, are really concerned about being able to pay a large and unexpected bill. As far as earnings are concerned, you know, it's going to be, for some individuals, a big motivator. For others, it might not be. Earning less money, if you want flexible hours, looking after children or something like that, that's going to be good. That's going to work for you. However, if you've got, you know, lots of bills to pay every month, families to look after, then you'll want to earn more money. And there's a big message here, I think, for employers that these people do feel that they are underpaid. But it isn't just about pay. It's about other motivators as well, which are around flexibility. It's around, leniency of when people can clock on and clock off, when they can have their break times. And also, what seems to be important is the location of where people work, so locality. And that, I guess, is about work-life balance, being able to get to work easily from home, not having long commuting times.
Emma, any thoughts from yourself from the point of view of what Jane's been talking about?
Do you think that it plays a part with their mental health as well, really? Because, it's important to find that work-life balance. You hear all these stories about people who may be putting too much time into their work and not enough time to kind of relax and everything, and maybe that's because they're focusing too much on the money aspect rather than the happiness.
Yeah, I mean, I think work can really affect mental health sometimes, and that's about, knowing what your own boundaries are in terms of what's possible for you, I guess, but also employers being aware of individual well-being in the workplace, and encouraging people to take lunch breaks, encouraging, you know, a walk in the middle of the morning just to go and, you know, clear the air. There's definitely a need to be very careful in terms of how much you're happy to give to your employer. And employers have a duty of care as well to look after you, to make sure that what you're doing is manageable.
And Robin?
Yes?
Any thoughts?
I think work-life balance is critical. When you're employed and you're working for a wage, you know, most people these days have to live from paycheck to paycheck, which brings with it its own level of stress. And as was rightly said earlier on, you know, what are you going to do if an unexpected large bill comes in? But, you know, if you're happy in your work, you're...
You should clap your hands.
Yeah.
Happy. And you know, you should clap your hands. I don't know why Gumtree don't actually use that.
They say money can't buy happiness, but you know,
it helps the pain.
Well, it, you can be miserable in style.
And finally, Fergus, any thoughts or questions from yourself?
I was just thinking, is there like an aspect of maybe like the amount of workload you have that contributes to maybe how happy you are in the job, like? If in the fitness industry, maybe it's like a few hours, but kind of spaced out, you know, if they're doing kind of the classes or if they're doing a more personal session, or maybe if you're working in security, maybe you're in like a particular area for a few hours. Yeah. So could you say workload is maybe a factor in a person's happiness within their job?
A really interesting point. I think workload can be for some individuals, and that, you know, opportunity to have space throughout the day to, you know, have your own time to quietly, you know, complete tasks, or, you know, have a coffee, or, you know, go and do something with the children. It's definitely going to make a difference. On the other hand, I guess there will be individuals who are really motivated by being incredibly busy. Between 8 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock at night, and that intensity.
They live to work as opposed to working to live, or possibly both.
Indeed.
It's all to do with fulfilment, isn't it?
Yes, it's all to do with fulfilment and also individual difference. You know, we're all different in terms of what motivates us and what makes us happy at work.
Gumtree.com/jobs, presumably, Jane, the best place to go to find out further details about this particular data survey and so on.
Absolutely, that's it, gumtree.com/jobs, that's the one.
And I've got to ask this question, Jane. Are you happy in your job as Director at Personal Career Management?
So, nice question. I absolutely love my job.
Yay!
Yeah.
I mean, because it would have been so embarrassing if, you know, we'd reached this sort of stage and say, no, I can't cope anymore with these media broadcasts, one thing after the other.
No, I love my job. I really enjoy my Monday mornings going to work and helping people, you know, get more from their working lives. So, yeah, what more could I ask for?
Exactly. Jane Gerrard, Director at Personal Career Management. Many, many thanks indeed. Take care. I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
Good to speak to you.
Cheers.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Come, my little friends, as we all sing a happy little working song. Merry little voices, clear and strong. Come and roll your sleeves up, so to speak, and pitch in. Cleaning crud up in the kitchen as we sing along. Trill a cheery tune in the tub as you scrub a stubborn mildew stain. Pluck a hairball from the shower drain to the gay refrain of a happy working song. We'll keep singing without fail, otherwise we'd spoil it. Hosing down the garbage pail and scrubbing up the toilet. Ooh, how we all enjoy letting loose with a little la-da-dum-dum-dum. While we're emptying the vacuum up, it's such fun to hum a happy working song. Ooh, a happy working song. Oh, how strange a place to be. Happy working tune to hum. While you're sponging up the soapy scum, we adore each filthy chore that we determine. So friends, even though you're vermin, we're a happy working tune. and the stinky socks. Sing along. If you cannot sing, then hum along as we're finishing our happy working song. Ah, wasn't this fun?
Of course it was, Amy. One of your better roles, together with, of course, the chap who was Cyclops in the X-Men, Scott Marsden. Or is it James Marsden? James Marsden.
James Marsden.
James Marsden, who, of course, was in Enchanted. We're all happy. Coming up in a few moments, we're going to talk about saving the planet. Apparently, the message that we're running out of time is finally landing. We'll be talking to WWF's very own Gareth Redmond about saving the planet. Are you concerned about saving the planet, Emma, or is it a case of, what the hey, I don't care anymore?
No, I am concerned about saving it, obviously. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, you'd be off to do the Representing Homelessness conference that's actually on in a few moments. You'd be tweeting there. How can people who are listening to this possibly follow you on Twitter and follow the Representing Homelessness hashtag? What should they do?
The hashtag is Representing Homelessness. Mm-hmm. And the Twitter account
is also, from that point of view,
is also
we'll find that out. You will find that out before too long, exactly, which is great stuff. Okay, moving on. Are you concerned about the planet, Fergus?
Yeah, I am. I think if there, even if you don't think that there's much, if it's not much of a concern to you, I think you would at least try, you know, instead of doing nothing.
Giving up completely. Okay, yeah, we've got some interesting thoughts and suggestions why. And Robin, no, after all, we destroy the planet, so why should we bother? You know, why should we care? Our generation, step away, you know, do something completely different.
It's all our fault. Kids, we apologise.
Don't go down the guilt factor, honestly. Joyous dancing pixie that is C.P. Grogan when she was head singer for Altered Images. I could be happy, and we are not happy when we start saving the planet, because all will be well. Certainly according to Old Mount Cider, as recently identified by the empty Glastonbury site, where only 0.5% of tents had been left behind. Good cause for celebration. 80% of people inspired to take eco-action to help save our planet after watching nature documentaries. 60% of people happy to reduce single-use plastic. It's all good news, isn't it, Gareth Redmond King from the WWF?
It is always great news when people want to take action to tackle this problem. We know that the climate crisis is getting worse. We know that we've got the highest levels of public concern about it. So it really is brilliant, this new Old Moot research that shows that 8 out of 10 people want to take action. And we're only too happy to help and offer suggestions.
And some of those suggestions are quite extraordinary in terms of ways forward. I was quite fascinated. I mean, what was your own personal favourite out of the list of top 10 that are coming out here in terms of ways in which Emma and Fergus and Robin and other listeners can actually effectively help save the planet?
Well, my favourites are always the choices where, I mean, any choice that we make to try and reduce our impact cuts emissions, and that's great. But I really like the choices where actually we're changing the behaviour of businesses as well. So changing your energy provider to a green energy provider, to renewables, that has an impact on the market as well. So not only are you cutting your impact, but you're driving businesses to change their supply, to make it cleaner, to make it greener. So I really like those ones.
I was particularly impressed with the number one choice, turning your home into a nature reserve. Many people say that's just because I don't cut the hedge. Bug hotels, planting native flowers, rewilding your garden can help attract bees, hedgehogs, beetles and slugs. Let's not forget
if
that.
If it gives you an excuse not to mow the lawn, then great. But more than a third of people in this survey said that they would happily plant to support bees and wildlife, and that's so important because the biggest threat to our wildlife is the loss of habitat. There are all sorts of things that affect that, our food supply system, but also the way that we, you know, concrete over our driveways for our cars. So if we can actually leave a little bit of nature, a little bit of wild space to help hedgehogs and bees, then, you know, we're helping the whole ecosystem.
The 50-wear challenge. Now, Emma, again, you're our fashion expert. Are you familiar with the 50-wear challenge in which it suggested you should wear everything you own at least 50 times before buying something new and hold clothes, swaps and upcycling parties and events with your friends?
I was not aware of that, but...
Now that you are?
Now that I am, yes. Yeah. But I don't think I'm that bad with clothes. Mm-hmm. I think I generally try to pass them on. And not to buy as much. So.
I mean, Robin, from your Green Lantern T-shirt, you're expertly modelling today from that point. Yes. Will that be upcycled and passed down through the family? Will it be like a family heirloom?
A family heirloom, yes.
And Fergus?
Well, being the youngest of three brothers, I did get the hand-me-down treatment.
Upcycled. So.
Yeah, the upcycle treatment, yeah, we'd call it what you want.
Got to also say, interested to talk about the eco doggy bags scenario, because that sort of particularly interested me in terms of, is that something that you would recommend from the sort of general thing that, Gareth, we should actually use as a matter of course, the eco doggy bags, where you can effectively take your Tupperware to meals out to avoid food waste and unnecessary single-use plastic. I mean, you know, when Robin and Sam Stone and David Howe and myself were actually should we brought our own cutlery and things to the restaurant? What do you think?
Very good. No, I mean anything that avoids single use is great, because there's so much energy that goes into making these things. If we rip open a packet or open a bottle of water and use it once and then chuck it away, or you know that energy is it just needs to be used again to make a new version of it, and also that waste often ends up in the environment doing all sorts of harm to the environment. So the benefit of taking our own bag or our own box anywhere and just avoiding that single use is really, really important. And anything as well that we can do to reduce the amount of food that we waste. Not a lot of people know that there are 7.7 billion people on the planet. We produce enough food to feed about 10 billion, but we waste so much of it. If we put together all of the food waste in the world, and it was the equivalent of a country, it would be the third biggest emitter in the world after the US and China. That's how much emissions we are wasting in terms of our food waste. So anything that we can do that cuts that down is helping, is having an impact. And again, it's one of those things that helps that drives behavior in the market as well. Our demand affects businesses' supply.
Sure. Emma, any thoughts?
did you hear about the I can't remember what group they were called, but there was a group of people at Waitrose in Lincoln who got some of the customers involved in taking all of the plastic off of their shopping, and then they gave I think it was about 2 trolleys load worth of these plastic wrappers and all this sort of stuff. They gave them back to Waitrose. So do you think that, you know, packaging like that is... it's inefficient in a way, and it's not really necessary when we've got our own bags, our own tubs that we can take in for fruit and things like that. So do you think maybe supermarkets could be doing more, or does it go higher than that?
No, they absolutely can be doing more, and that's, you know, they're so powerful. So many of us rely on supermarkets. So what they put on the shelves drives our behaviour to some extent. So given they put so much of that single-use plastic on the shelves, I think it's great when people say, well, I don't want this, so I'm going to leave this here. I'm going to make this your problem. Because, A, then the company has to be responsible for getting rid of it, and, B, they might think twice about how they can reduce it and avoid the problem in the first place.
Mm. Robin, any thoughts?
You know what really drives me nuts? Mm-hmm. I live in the countryside, mm-hmm. and I can fully understand why people... I mean, you brought up the subject of doggy bags. Yes. Now, I want to talk about the other kind of doggy bag. Mm-hmm. I can understand why people don't want dogs fouling public footpaths. Mm. I fully understand. So they introduce these little black plastic bags that you can put it in. Okay, those aren't biodegradable, and people scoop up their dog mess, which is biodegradable, and leave them by the side of the path in a bag that isn't. What is wrong with people?
Gareth, this sounds like a controversy that needs your input in terms of that.
I'm entirely with you. It's utterly, utterly bonkers. What are they thinking, parceling up this little present and leaving it on the side of the road? It's absolutely crazy. I mean,
it's something
also,
that will never rot.
No, I want to tell these people that you can get bags that will eventually biodegrade, but even those sit around for an awful long time. Really, you know, take it somewhere, put it in the bin, or kick it into a ditch somewhere where it's actually going to biodegrade. You know, as long as it's out of the way and no one's going to stand in it.
Mm. Absolutely.
Could open up a whole range of things here. I mean, my question for Gareth is basically, as head of climate change, it sounds pretty awesome. Does that mean you're in charge of all the climate change that we've actually got in the WWF? Because it's great. It's a fantastic title. It's probably the best job title we've had for many a time, Gareth. You know,
it's definitely not the best job title in the organisation. I have... We produced a programme with Netflix called Our Planet, which was on recently, an amazing nature documentary. David Attenborough voiced it. And my colleague who was responsible for that, he is the executive director of Our Planet.
Nice.
That is the best job title.
It's working you through in so many ways. How can people find out more about Old Mount Cider and indeed what we've been talking about today in terms of how the desire, and I think it is a desire, which we've identified in the studio today about eco-conscious British folk and citizens of the planet wanting to actually do more to actually help save the planet, but also ensure that we maintain the quality of life that we've become used to.
Well, if they go to Old Moot's website, these tips are all set out there with lots of other information to help you. And it would be remiss of me not to say that they can also find lots more information as well about how to make those choices that will reduce your impact on the WWF website as well. And the other thing, of course, that is important for people to do as well as the choices that we make, it's about how we use our voices and how we raise our voices and demand of politicians that they take action. So you can find all of that on the WWF website as well.
And I think, as we've said before, not to be confused with WWF wrestling, that's a different line entirely. Yes, World Wildlife Fund. That's a much more critical thing from that point of view. Gareth, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Fantastic, yes, thank you very much.
So can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
I look forward to it very much.
I'm not afraid to die.
rightly just demonstrated she's actually got a reusable water bottle in hand at this particular moment in time. We'll even take a photograph, Emma, just to prove that for social media, which is great stuff. Okay. It's fantastic. Okay, coming up shortly, Lucy Alexander, TV presenter from Homes Under the Hammer and more, as well as head of communications at the Gas Safe Register, Scott DeRock. I know, it's so Kim DeRock, Scott DeRock, Dwayne DeRock Johnson. Let's see if we can work through that whole process. All talking about how British folk are prioritising redecorating over safety. That's prioritising redecorating over safety. I know, it's shocking, but it is happening in this country as we speak. An 80s theme, really. Fine Young Cannibals. Roland Gift, of course, in lead vocal position with Johnny Come Home. And sort out the safety of your gas register, we might well say, as we talk about this style over safety issue with two amazingly wonderful people. First of all, the awesomely talented TV presenter. She's always good value. It's the fantastic Lucy Alexander. How are you, Lucy?
That is the best introduction I've ever had. I'm very well. How are you?
Oh, very good indeed. It's all great. As we said, Lucy, we always tell them as we see them, as we do with the head of communications at the Gas Safe Register. It's not Dwayne DeRock Johnson. It's Scott DeRock. How are you, Scott?
Very well, thanks, Alan.
Excellent. And indeed, no relationship, we don't need to point out straight away, with Kim DeRock, who was, of course, the UK ambassador to the USA recently.
Uncle Kim, he's terribly well.
Are you kidding me?
No, I am kidding.
There you go. It just goes to show. Now, on a serious note, this little item about British folk prioritising redecorating over safety. I mean, Lucy, Homes Under the Hammer, fantastic series, of course. But you know, this is something which is not good, is it?
Well, you know, we all want instant gratification from our houses. We love buying homes. We're a nation of property lovers. But 27% say the most important thing is decorating. 21% say a new bathroom or kitchen is important. And only 12% said a new boiler. Now, Gas Safe Register have said it's too low on their list of priorities. Now, you know, I was chatting to Scott earlier saying, I am probably one of those people that if I've got a bit of spare money stashed, the first thing I'm not going to think about is, oh, getting my boiler checked. You know, I want instant gratification. I want to buy something for my house. I want my house to look better. I want to update my kitchen. I want to knock down the walls. I want to put beautiful wallpaper up. I want to try and add some value. But having chatted about the safety of the boiler and the home, it's really, really got to be out there, probably number one on your list. It's got to be a priority.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, almost three in ten, I should say, of UK home buyers have had to replace their boiler earlier than anticipated due to it being faulty or old. I'll just test this with the studio co-hosts today. Robin, when was the last time you sorted out your boiler in Wales?
We had ours serviced and maintained last Monday.
Oh,
you see. Oh, you see. Now, 10 out of 10.
It's done annually.
There you are.
I mean, really, how much worth do these people think carbon monoxide poisoning is going to put on their houses?
And this is the thing. Is, you know, as Lucy said, is we think about the things that we can see, you know, and you want to make that visual change around it. But actually, your gas appliances, if they're working well, if they're working as they should do, your boiler might be in a cupboard in the kitchen or, you know, in a utility room or something. We don't see these things. But just as you say, if they go wrong, the potential consequences are very, very serious.
Yeah.
You know, gas is a safe fuel that's treated with respect. But, you know, the potential consequences, if and when things go wrong, it can be fire, it can be explosion, it can be exposure to carbon monoxide poisoning, which, as you said, can be fatal. So what we just want to do is, we don't want to spoil people's fun, but, you know, part of the great home buying experience. We don't want to add hugely to the burden. And, you know, it's a stressful time as well as a fun time. We just want to say to people, you need this on your list. I don't care if it's number one item, I don't care if it's number two item, but I want it on your checklist of things that you are sure that you've asked the questions, you've got the evidence that you need to make really good decisions. So when you're sitting in your new house, drinking warm champagne from a cracked coffee mug because it's the only thing you've unpacked and celebrating, you know that you and your family are safe in that lovely new home.
Absolutely.
I've actually sat and drank the champagne through the cracked coffee. How do you know?
Everybody does. I think everybody does.
I think the interesting thing as well is, Alex, that, you know, if you get your survey done, the more money you spend on a comprehensive survey is something I always advise and say to people, you know, you're just better off spending the money, getting a good survey done where people do actually lift up the rug and go up into the attic and have a good old mooch around. But what I found interesting is it's not a legal requirement to have any information about the gas boiler on there, is it, Scott?
Exactly. I mean, even in a comprehensive survey, you know, the surveyor may go around and they may note that, you know, it's an older gas appliance that's here. I don't see any signs of distress, or I do see signs of distress. They may know something, but unless they are a qualified gas safe registered engineer, or you have explicitly instructed them to get a gas safe registered engineer to actually go and investigate these things, you can't know that that's necessarily part of it. So for a home buyer, to add that item to the list that says, I know it's not necessarily something that I want to add top of my list of discretionary purchases, things that, you know, be lovely to do, you want to make sure that you've got evidence from, you know, the building regulations certificate's been, you know, all lodged appropriately. There's warranty information if it's a relatively new boiler and it's still within warranty. And there's evidence of gas, of servicing records or safety checks every year. Those are the kind of things that you want to see. And the absence of those, you know, it's something that you want to see, and you have to ask why they're not there.
And in so many ways, that's one of the reasons why, you know, at the top of the piece we talked to you about people rating buying a home actually being even more stressful than starting a new job or indeed getting married.
Now, listen, it's a property, it's an emotional roller coaster, and it ranks alongside death and divorce, I've been told.
Yeah.
It's the only deal where money, feelings and stress all play a huge part in your life, and I think people do underestimate that. It's a very stressful time, but it's also a really fun time, and what we don't want to do is kick the fun out of it today by talking about this.
So, Emma, I mean, you're listening to Emma and Scott from that point of view. Does this fill you with fear? I mean, you're a wee bit away possibly from purchasing your own property, or maybe you're not. Maybe you're thinking, I'm going to buy one next week.
I don't think I'll be buying one as soon as next week. But I'm living at home at the moment, but I think, you know, within the next couple of years, it's something that I'll be thinking about. And it hasn't really scared me, but it's probably reminded me that there is more to buying a house than I originally thought, and it's not just about
the smell of bacon bread,
the colours that I want on my walls. And
yeah, so, and Fergus, what about yourself again as a postgraduate student?
Yeah, I remember a few years ago when we were the boiler back home, we basically had to keep getting it checked, like, because there just seemed to be an issue with it. It was like, we had to just keep going.
This is a Leicester boiler, of course.
It is, yeah.
And not a brand, part of the country.
I remember just getting checked for a while, and I don't know what the issue was, but I think since then it is like just checked annually just in case, but.
And as Robin,
it's quite troublesome, yeah.
As Scott, you would presumably, as head of communications at the Gas Safe Register, endorse that. Check the boiler on an annual basis.
Absolutely. Well, get a qualified Gas Safe Registered engineer to check it on an annual basis.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you want. And that might be, you know, we're pretty open about how you might do that. You might
find a local engineer. You know, might have found them via our website. You might have had a recommendation. You might have a service plan with your energy supplier or others. However that engineer has come into your life, we just say, check the qualifications. Every engineer has an ID card, so on the front it shows that they are who they say they are, which is a pretty good starting point, yeah. And on the back shows the qualifications that they hold. So you want to make sure that they are qualified to do the particular bit of work that you want to do. If you're doing that, it hugely reduces the risk that, you know, that you won't get what you expected here. And, you know, we go out, we inspect work across the country, we investigate reports of illegal gas work. So using a registered engineer is just one of those comfort things that will help you and lets you get on with the other things that you want to do, particularly if that's involving your house buying bit. You want to do this, think about it, know, right, that's that bit dealt with until this time next year.
It's incredible, isn't it, that you go along and you buy a house, you view millions of properties, you're about to spend the hugest amount of money you've ever spent, and you don't get to try before you buy. You know, you walk into a lounge and you go, oh, there's a gas fire there, don't even know if it works. Oh, there's an oven, does that work? There's a boiler. You know, you don't get to try before you buy. So I think what we're talking about today is if you can have some comfort in knowing that, you know, you have got a gas safe register, somebody's checked it out, even though this is not a legal requirement, gosh, it'll just give you peace of mind, I think, if you've got a family, you've got kids, and you're living safely in your home.
And that surely has to be the reason why Lucy Alexander and Scott Durock would be the ideal leaders of the country. Take that, Boris Johnson. And,
I'll take that, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's worthwhile sorting through that. Way to find out more details about this particular topic, Scott, where would you suggest people go to? Would it be the Gas Safe Register?
It would be. You would come to our website, which is gassaferegister.co.uk. There's lots of really great advice on there, information about carbon monoxide and other things. You can find an engineer there. You can check an engineer if you found one. There's lots of good stuff. Or you can give us a call on 0800 408 5500.
And clearly, I would undoubtedly say, if you're not already at Lucy Alexander TV, following the awesome Lucy Alexander, you should do that. Work our way through that. Have you both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been good for you both?
Very good.
Oh, I've loved it. It's been highlight of my day, Alex. Well, and of course, talking to all your lovely people in your office.
Yes, you've
got. I like that. Emma was lovely.
Oh, thank you.
Lovely.
And Robin, 10 out of 10, as Scott
and
said.
Yeah, exactly. Won the show.
There we are. It'll happen. I take it. Then you will both return in the not too distant future.
We'd love to.
Yay.
Really love to.
fair to say you don't necessarily have to be following the shenanigans going on in Washington with respect to presidencies and so on to appreciate that actually there are a whole range of issues in terms of influencers and the ways in which TV and the media actually presents ourselves and works through that. I mean, I can cite my own going into science as an example of sort of working through the whole notion of Gerry Anderson's work back in the day. So clearly, children's television can actually have an impact. Recent report, however, has actually suggested that maybe, just maybe, many children are actually being prejudiced, perhaps unconsciously, by the kind of things that they're seeing. And to talk about this, we're delighted to welcome child and educational psychologist, the wonderful Laverne Antrobus. Good morning, Laverne. And the founder and CEO of Hopster, which you'll find more about in a few seconds. That's the joys of Nicholas Walters. How are you, Nicholas?
Good morning.
In fact, Nicholas, let's come to you first. Talk a bit more about Hopster and how this particular sort of thing can really sort of impact in terms of learning and fun and working within the under sixes. Such a crucial time in child development.
Yeah, absolutely. So at Hopster, we are a video and learning platform for preschool kids. So basically what we do is we bring together video, games, books and music, all organized around a learning curriculum. And you can get us on tablet, mobile phone and connected TV. So really what we say we want to do as a platform is we want to help kids learn through the stories they love. And I think, just think that's really important. As you say, this is a time when kids are just absolutely like sponges. They're soaking up everything from the environment around them. And it's really important that the time they do spend watching shows or in front of screens is time that's well spent.
Laverne, we've come a long, long way since Piaget was actually doing his child basic experiments with his children and various other bits and pieces. But clearly this aspect with respect to gender stereotyping, negative stereotypes and so on, LGBT, BAME and so on, it's not great, is it?
It doesn't... I mean, there's room for improvement, is definitely the case. And actually, I think it's a sort of seminal piece of work, really, in terms of the research. What it's telling us is have a close look at what your children are watching. Nobody's saying that we want them to stop watching. We just want content makers to get really excited about the diverse world that we live in and really make sure that, you know, when they're putting content out there, children will see themselves represented. I think there's going to be an argument about, really, are children looking for things like that? But we just don't know. And I think that, you know, when you've got an absence of something, that's when you have to ask yourself the question about what could you actually be featuring? You know, where could you put those top lines in where girls and boys, male and female characters, have responsibility for knowledge, for leadership? You know, that there's not a sense that female characters have got to just be in the background looking great, whatever that means. But also that, you know, disability, you know, we've got a population of 22% of people who would be classed as having a disability. Where are they? And are they there in the content in a positive way? Because I think sometimes what we've seen through the research is that they don't necessarily have the best character headlines. Often they've got a more sort of sinister character. And why is that? So it's about being a bit sort of clever, I think, with how we're presenting these images.
I was particularly interested to find that it was streaming and subscription services like Netflix, Amazon, etc. that were found to stream more negative cultural, social or gender stereotypes. Because I would have thought that actually new technologies, they might be a little bit more ahead of the game as opposed to kind of just prefiguring and representing old stereotypes that were worn out years ago.
I think that is a surprise, isn't it? And actually what we found is through the research is that BBC come out very well. CBBs, you know, have some of the top content for really paying attention to some of these big headlines. And they are big headlines. They're the ones that, you know, when you sit down with your child watching the television, you know, that you want to be represented. You don't want to have negative stereotypes in front of them where, you know, single parents are responsible for everything that goes wrong, or that, as I said before, females have to look a certain way. And, you know, one of the key things is the characters are there. So if we're looking at BAME issues, you know, BAME characters are there in about half of the content. But then when you drill down a bit further, you're seeing that only 6 out of the 50 shows, they have a sort of headline performative element to them. You know, they're not in the foreground. So it's these slight tweaks, I think, where we want people to be paying attention to what's being watched and what's being made for young children.
Nick, I was fascinated to find that you looked after the launch of Nickelodeon HD and Nick Jr. in Russia. How did that fit in terms of stereotypes, etc.? Was it a case of, no, then there's no problem. Under Vladimir Putin, everybody's represented in full diversity.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually this is an interesting example of why we need to think about these issues. I mean, I think there are many countries around the world, and Russia is one of them, that take a view that you should never represent someone who's gay on screen, and you should particularly never represent someone who's gay on screen in kids' programming. Mm. And I think you've really got to ask yourself if you're a kid who's growing up with two mums or two dads, and there are plenty of families like that in the UK now, or if you're a kid who's growing up and beginning to question your own sort of sexual orientation, never seeing yourself and never seeing a family that looks like you on screen is going to cause you to ask real questions. It's going to cause you to feel very uncertain about your place in the world. And look, I think it's, there's no comparison between the UK and Russia. I think we have, clearly the UK made an awful lot more progress on these issues. But I think, some of those, I think it's a reminder, really, of how important it is that we do focus on these.
I'm reminded of the words of the late Martin Luther King, where he insisted that it was so important that Nichelle Nichols maintained her role with Star Trek as Lieutenant Uhura, because at that time it was an opportunity to actually show and demonstrate to non-white Americans that actually there was a future for them in a command setting as well, from that point of view. So that was 50 years ago. We're still having this discussion, though, Laverne. I mean, are we getting there? Is it a case of, it's just a long, long haul, because the recent last series of Doctor Who was attacked mercilessly by people who said, oh, it's the BBC being politically correct.
Are getting there. I think that this is a one of those sort of timely reminders that we can always be doing more, and that we do have to look after the minds of very young children, because they are sponges, they are picking things up. We don't know how much they are picking up, but I've worked with children over a number of years and in a teaching capacity, and there's nothing more beautiful than hearing a child say, they were like me. There is no sentence that sort of trumps that when you're talking to children about the way in which they want to find themselves in the world. And that really, I think the top message is we want to be inclusive and we want to make sure that everybody's represented. We're not saying, that what's out there is terrible and, we want to stop it. It's about how do we build on some of those very, very good characters that are out there and include people in a way that, very young children start to see a bit of themselves.
Yeah, I must admit, though, I was slightly amused by the finding that in My Little Pony, the unintelligent working-class goat characters were given strong southern US accents. It appealed to me. Maybe it's just a case of I haven't raised my consciousness on that level, but y'all come back now is a whole new world. Where can people go to find out further details about this particular research, Laverne, and more aspects about Hopster as well?
Well, it's on the Hopster website, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah, it's on the Hopster website at www.hopster.tv.
Nicholas Walters, founder and chief executive officer of Hopster, and Laverne Antrepus, child and educational psychologist extraordinaire. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Really tempted to actually talk about Nicholas Walters and how maybe you should have had a bunny rabbit as a lead mascot for Hopster. But, maybe that was News Bunny. That's another series that Live TV used to have. You're probably too young to remember when News Bunny was there and employed by one of my former students, actually, a chap dressed up in a rabbit costume and actually gesticulated behind Newsreader for Live TV. Those were the days of radical broadcasting. It's changed since then. Of course, we've got Sky Sport and such like. Anyway, thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Chloe Rose, Will Meller, Ian Lennox, Jane Gerard, Gareth Redmond, Lucy Alexander and Scott DeRock, Laverne Antrepus and Nicholas Walters. And in the studio, thanks to Emma Street. If you're looking to follow the Twitter, it's at Our Homelessness for the conference that's being held at the University of Lincoln that we were talking about earlier. At Our Homelessness. There's also a podcast that's up about it, which you can also listen to as well. Robin Pearce, have you enjoyed the last two editions of the Midweek Drive and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
I really have. Thank you very much for all your hospitality here at the studio.
Of course, we may actually bring you in as a telephonic contributor to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
All right, then.
That's another possibility. Of course, the Midweek Drive, you're back with us next Wednesday.
I will be, yes. Thank
Excellent.
You.
We'll be having In Your Seat, as we now refer to the official Robin Pearce seat in the studio, which used to be the Phil Lerner seat. That's Robin Pearce. Anyway, Phil's still around. We will be having Phil Hamlin-Williams, who is the director of the Lincoln Book Festival, which is what we start talking about next Wednesday as far as the production is concerned. Fergus, you're back for that?
I will be, yeah.
Excellent. This is good stuff. That's it. A reminder, of course, at 7 o'clock this evening, we have a brand new series starting, which is also available for podcast, very much looking at science and the modern world. It's called From Molecules to Mountains. or from mountains to molecules, from molecules to mountains. And we talk about interdisciplinarity and such like stuff. It's really exciting material that works with a whole variety of things, including planetary change as well. So that launches at 7 o'clock this evening. And as we said, lots of other great things happening as far as Siren Radio is concerned. A shameless plug as well. You can also download Piercing the Veil, which is a podcast that I believe, Robin, you're involved with, so you can plug that quite happily.
It's our weekly podcast that I do from home with my son, Steve. So, yeah.
Give Fergus something to listen to whilst he's doing his dissertation.
Yeah.
All sorts of things will work our way through that. And that's it. We're out of here. We've done our roll of honour. We've thanked people from that point of view. And we just wish you all the very best for a fabulous, awesome Thursday, July the 18th, 2019. The news, take us up to the news. Well, it'll be calmer, obviously. It's balanced. Carry the crown. Okay, what shall we say? I think we'll keep to that classic Portmurrian line as evoked by Patrick McGowan in the series The Prisoner. Of course, three little words, be seeing you. After three, one, two, three.
Be seeing you.
I know there's nothing left for me to say. You've bet it all and lost again. You'll never be the one who knows what I know. 'Cause honestly, I think you need this more than I do. We've never been more than just a passing thing. But you don't know me the way that I do now. 'Cause maybe it's not. You need this more than I do. We've never been more than just a passing thing. But you don't know me the way.